So PSA screening for prostate cancer, it's a perennial topic.
Always a controversial issue.
Yeah. How many years on? 15
continents fighting each other.
Exactly. You know, one whole lobby saying PSA, routine PSA screening causes more harm than good. Others saying that it's the best tool we have, etc.
Best biomarker still.
Exactly.
Good triage tool, but...
not perfect.
Not perfect. That I think we can all accept.
So very, very interesting paper this week, which gives us a whole new way of thinking about this whole topic of early detection of prostate cancer for men. Traditionally, we've tried to augment PSA testing or add in another little biomarker. This is that. What about don't do the PSA at all?
Yeah.
Well, that's what we're going to focus on in this episode of GUcast. We got a fantastic couple of guests coming on from a big paper published in BMJ Oncology this week, so stay tuned for that.
Absolutely, but first, as we always do, we've got our favourite Aoife McVeigh back in the studio, and I want to say she's going to give us an update on Twitty Leaks, but sadly it's not Twitty Leaks anymore, and it's more like X Leaks.
Yeah. I think we're having to change it to X Leaks.
Aoife, I'm very depressed by the whole thing, though. It
seems
doesn't,
a bit shitty,
you know,
the term, yeah.
I miss the little bird.
Yeah, me too, me too.
So what's out there? What's new in the world of social media?
Yeah, well, look, in general, I feel like everyone's still debating, especially in the UK, about, I suppose, the physician associates, nurse practitioners, you know, those roles and that sort of ongoing. There's still the usual stuff, but I suppose... I've seen a few serious ones and a few more silly ones this week that I thought I'd share.
Excellent.
I think, first of all, the serious stuff. So this is something that we've been talking about a lot, actually, in our own research meeting at Peter Mac, which we're all into artificial intelligence at the moment. It's a hot topic. And actually, Stacey Loeb-Edson had published a paper in JAMA Oncology looking at sort of assessing the different artificial intelligence chatbots for sort of sources of information for patient information. So they looked at putting in questions about different big cancers and then seeing sort of the quality of the output of that. And it looked pretty good, to be honest. So I think in terms of the information that was being provided, it showed that it was good. There was no sort of misinformation. But again, some issues in terms of, I suppose, the readability of it or the interpretation of it for patients. So I thought, you know, it's a very good paper to first come out, especially in the new sort of AI era. And yeah, I suppose more to come. I think that's definitely an area that we were talking about would be very useful for AI in medicine. So.
And I think it's a great paper because she's focused on the five most common cancers and the most researched queries about those cancers. Yeah. So, you know, sort of common day-to-day things that you and I might research about the common cancers. So I think that's a great read in JAMA Oncology. Very good.
And Stacey has quite a lot of background in this. She's done a lot of work looking at disinformation, misinformation with YouTube and prostate cancer and other stuff like that. So I think the arrival of AI fits right into an area of research interest that she has already. So well done, Stacey, friend of the podcast.
Yes, loved absolutely, Stacey.
And then on to, I suppose, more my theme, the silly ones that I've seen. So this was pretty funny. I love his Twitter name as well, Midlife Crisis, which Robin, and it was the debate of tucked or untucked with scrubs. So that actually got 2 million views and a lot of votes. And I think the unanimous vote was actually untucked, which I think is probably the UK and Australian way. So
it's close, though. Sure,
yeah, very close. Far. Very close. I actually think they had someone in fashion actually weigh in on it and they actually said untucked. So maybe that's sort of drawing the line under it all. Someone actually made a point about how there was a pocket in the bottom left. So why would you tuck it? You know, waste that nice pocket that you have. But anyway, I thought that was pretty funny.
Good.
Yeah, and then this is another one I'd actually seen a couple of weeks ago. But this was a thread that came up about urologists that were tweeting their first papers. And a lot of them are really esteemed sort of academic urologists now. And it's really nice to see where they started. Like a lot of them will be, you know, case reports and, you know, like maybe not so well-known journals. And it sort of is good from someone from my perspective, especially sort of starting off in a career to see, you know, where people can start and where you can end up. And it's just important just to get involved in research and just keep putting stuff out there.
Yeah, that's funny. Look, it was led by Ben Davies, and you can see the usual suspects. Matt Nielsen, Todd Morgan, Mo Alaf, all in there. I can tell you what mine was.
I was going to ask Declan and Renee, what were yours?
Yeah, mine was a case report. It was this poor guy who cut off his own testicles in a public toilet in the emergency department of the hospital I was working in. So it was entitled Self-Castration, a Waiting List Initiative. because the poor guy had said it was because he was struggling to, you know, get onto a waiting list to have gender reassignment surgery. So tragic thing, really. But it was my first publication. So you remember your first publication, don't you?
What a way to start,
Mine was a little bit more serious. And I wasn't on Twitter at the time, or X at the time. But it was just on lymph node dissection trends in a major Australian tertiary oncology institution.
Conclusion?
Higher lymph node yields, I think, over time.
You're making it up now. You can't even remember what you published.
I can't remember.
Very good. Yeah. And you had one other. Look at this one.
Yeah. Always love a good dramatic video. So this is, I've seen this huge, huge bladder stone. It's from, I think it's Medverse. And it's open surgery and they're removing an absolutely massive bladder. So it sort of pops right up. And yeah, you can't really miss that whenever you're scrolling past it in your feed. You just have to sort of watch it. And actually on repeat, it's quite quite interesting to watch again and again. So here we are.
Stones.
Nothing like an open stone retrieval.
Never let it be said. Good. We don't do some stone surgery on this podcast, Renu.
Yeah,
exactly.
And how is X, you know, how is your X experience?
Look, I actually have come around to it. I actually find that, you know, whenever you search the app on your iPhone, if you type in Twitter or start to do TWI, it still comes up X. So I feel like I've come to terms with it. But you guys have just said before, maybe you're still adjusting. Not sure.
It's like it's going to the dark side.
It seems a bit miserable. I mean, everyone we speak to on the podcast says the same thing. And I was listening to a podcast the other day, more of a politics podcast, but there were journalists describing the imminent demise, that the business model is gone will go and something else will take its place, which seems really sad. They were the same journalists, you know, have used it a lot and it's been quite useful for us in academic urology. It's been very enjoyable, actually, hasn't it? So,
but that's why we're branching to TikTok.
Yes, we are. TikTok.
So we go to TikTok,
Without maybe the dancing and all that sort of business.
Well, thank you, Aoife, for great update. Now we don't have to go on X anymore. We just invite Aoife along to every podcast and she gives us the useful updates.
And I wonder what our guests make of all this Twitter stuff and all that as well. So we're really thrilled to welcome back, certainly a friend of the podcast, because Professor Caroline Moore was on the very first episode of GUCast 3.5 years ago, wasn't she?
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Which is fantastic. So Caroline's back along with Shonit Panwani is a radiologist at UCL. So it's a great privilege to welcome you two to GUCast, and congratulations on this paper. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Fantastic. So Caroline is a urologist, for those of you who don't know. She's a contemporary of mine. We pretty much trained together in the UK. And she's professor of urology at UCL. Her name is obviously very well known for anyone working in the fields of early detection of prostate cancer, focal therapy, prostate biopsy, because she's been involved in some big pivotal studies. And Shonit, you're a radiologist very specialized in MR, looking at novel technologies in MR, I gather, as well. And the pair of you work together at UCL and UCLH. Thanks for joining us. And as we said at the outset, Renu, part of the backdrop for this is the ongoing frustration with almost screening for prostate cancer using PSA being a dirty word, in many guidelines around the world, in many primary care guidelines, etc. USPSTF in the US, all sorts of confusion over the years. Pretty much everyone has said, look, that this is not, therefore it's not used. Therefore, there is no screening program anywhere around the world. It's all opportunistic, random screening, really, using PSA. And despite all the attempts to try and improve that, and indeed MR has had a key role in as a triage tool after someone's presented with a raised PSA to determine, does that person need a biopsy? And if they do, at least they get a targeted biopsy. But this is a very disruptive idea, Caroline, in this fantastic study you've just published in BMJ Oncology. We'll include a link in the show notes. It's the Reimagine study, the prevalence of MR lesions in men responding to a GP-led invitation for a prostate health check, a prospective study.
And, you know, I think that's the really exciting part about it, is that MRI has been studied quite extensively in the early detection scene, and it's become routine practice, especially for us in Australia. But this is really the first time it's been studied in a screening population completely independent of a PSA. So
this is just men in a GP practice, not having had a PSA necessarily, being invited along for an MRI scan. So tell us all about it.
Yeah, so interesting time. So just to say, in terms of a screening program, Lithuania has a PSA-based screening program. only country in the world, introduced reasonably recently and has led to a lot of overdiagnosis, which is why a lot of the world obviously doesn't do PSA screening. So we've seen the benefits of MRI for men with a raised PSA. We know it means that you get one in three men, or maybe half the men, can avoid a biopsy. So we asked the question, what happens if we move that back and do a short MRI scan as a screening test? So we offered men from the GP practice a PSA test and an MRI test at the same time. And then men could either screen positive based on the MRI scan or based on a raised PSA density. So not the absolute value of PSA, but the PSA divided by the volume of the prostate.
Very good. And so what did you find?
So around one in five men said yes to the invitation. So a little bit lower than we would have liked, but we started in December 2019. We stopped, as most of the world did, in April 2020. We restarted in July, so still pretty heavy pandemic time. So that may well have affected things. And we found that overall, one in five men screened positive. So the commonest positive screen was with the MRI. But for men with a negative MRI, as a backup, because we know that not all tumours are visible on MRI, we used a PSA density of 0.12, and about 1 in 20 men with a negative MRI had a positive PSA density. Mm-hmm. And then those positive screens got referred into NHS practice, where they then had our standard of care, which is the standard multiparametric MRI and a biopsy if there's a lesion on multiparametric MRI, or a raised PSA density, or concerns for other causes. And we essentially found that MRI was the most predictive for prostate cancer. And of the 25 significant cancers that we saw on MRI, half of those, just over half, 15 out of 25, had a PSA of less than 3.
Mm.
Wow. Mm. So if we'd done a PSA-based approach, we would have missed.
Yeah.
Half of the significant cancers that we found. And the other bit that was really useful, so when you look at many screening programs, you find that screening studies, you find that the ratio of significant to insignificant might be half and half, maybe a third insignificant. In ours, it was 29 men with significant cancer, 3 men with insignificant, or Gleason 3+3. So really changed the metric on overdiagnosis with this approach as well.
Amazing. And Seanit, I got a lot of media in the UK over the past few days, I can see, and a lot of the focus was on a 10-minute scan. And for any of the audience out there who've had their prostate MRI scanned like me, I spent 34 minutes in it. It wasn't the most pleasant thing in the world. So can you tell us about this 10-minute MRI scan?
Yeah. So as you said, you know, a normal multiparametric MR takes between 30 to 40 minutes, and you need an injection of contrast at the moment as well as part of that. I think one thing I have to put into context here, when people now have multiparametric MRI after they have an elevated PSA, they actually, because of their elevated PSA, have a higher risk, presumably, of having prostate cancer. Multiparametric MRI is really designed to be very sensitive. So as the papers have shown you, there's a 90% sensitivity for significant disease, but actually specificity is on the order of 40 to 50%. But when we went and thought about the reimagined study, one of the things we were thinking was, well, how do we get a test which is faster, but actually more specific? And so what we wanted to do was to have a look at the sequences that we use in multiparametric MRI and ask the question, where do we definitely see disease? And the two sequences you see it on, one is the T2 sequence, and the other one is a high diffusion weighted sequence. So those were the two sequences we used out of the entire 30-minute MRI, and that's what formed the 10-minute test. So I'm not surprised, actually, by the results, because we found disease which was, when it was biopsied, actually present much more often than we would with multiparametric MRI. The specificity is really high. What's shocking is how much disease there is out there, particularly with men with a low PSA. So we haven't done anything fancy. We've just taken components of the multiparametric MRI test, the ones which we know will pick up disease, and implemented them into the screening setting.
And Shona, what about the PIRATES 3 lesion? So were they categorized as an MRI positive lesion, or were they then kind of categorized into an MRI negative but PSA density treated according to PSA density?
The other thing we did, which parallels what happens in breast imaging to some extent, is we had radiologists, three of them, potentially looking at the MPMRI, so the abbreviated fast screening MR scan. And in essence, they had to say it was a screen positive or screen negative. And we used a very simple scoring system for this. If there's a white blob on your diffusion and a black blob on your T2 and they both correspond, it's a screen positive. So if two of the radiologists essentially said it was screen positive, the third one didn't need to have a look. If the two radiologists, the first two disagreed, a third one came in and said, I go with this or I go with that. So there is no PIRADS 3. We haven't scored it in that way.
I get it. Okay, so it's much, much more straightforward. Yeah. It's positive, negative, and then you go down a pathway.
Exactly.
And that's kind of amazing, isn't it, that you can do a scan. I'm just thinking straight away, how much more of an MR, even a multiparametric MR, can we cut out to get down to 10 minutes? I mean, the cost savings. Contrast obviously seems to be almost gone, isn't it? Or it's gone in very many jurisdictions. We still pretty much use contrast enhancement all the time. But in some MR units around Melbourne, it's not used. And obviously there are trials ongoing, the PRIME study looking at that. But what else? So T1, you don't do any T1 weighted images. You don't do an ADC map. So it's just the high B value weighted imaging, and T2, just axial for both, I suppose. And that's it.
Yeah. It was a really simple test to do, and a stupidly simple test to report. It takes the radiologist 30 seconds to say positive or negative looking at it.
There you go.
And what about cost savings? How much does it I mean, how feasible is it to have this in a screening setting?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, I'll give you my opinion, and then Caroline can tell you what she thinks. I think as a test, this is going to be just at the sweet spot for picking up exactly what we want to pick up and not seeing the bits we don't want to see. The difficulty at the moment is really a case of, who do you give this to? Do you apply it to everyone? Do you sub-select the population? And maybe Caroline, you've got some thoughts around that.
Yeah, so I think it is, of course, more costly than a PSA test, but in the UK, our age standardized mortality is about 50% higher than comparable countries like the US, France, Italy, Spain. And late stage disease is really expensive because we've got some really good treatments that keep men alive for a lot longer, but they're not particularly cheap. So there's a lot of costs associated with late disease. And of course, not only financial costs, but burden to the patient, burden to society. And the avoiding overdiagnosis. So our overdiagnosis rates were much less than the sort of single PSA testing that they did in CAP, much less than ERSPC. So even though we're picking up more disease, we're overdiagnosing less. So I hope, but we don't know yet, that the health economics would work out. I think there's enough to say that it is worth doing a large trial to look at this and to work out more on the health economics. This was a smaller study, and we can make some models on the health economics, but for a full analysis, you need a bigger study as well.
Yeah. Just to pick up.
Sorry, Shona.
I was going to say, just to pick up on the back of that, the number of people that got biopsied that did not have significant cancer was minuscule. I mean, it was tiny. If you got a biopsy, you needed it. But what was an issue is the number of people who went on to have a multiparametric MRI, which is, of course, now provided in secondary care as another test. And a proportion of those, a reasonable proportion, did not have something that needed a biopsy. The real question, and one of the things we're looking at in terms of our next bit of work, is how do you get the specificity of the biparametric early screening MR even better? And can you do that within 15 minutes? So some of the new sequences we're looking at might give you that option. And so we will, within the next, I think, 2-3 years, as part of the LIMIT trial, which is a subsequent trial to the Reimagine study, hopefully answer that question as well.
So if I heard you correctly, some of the men who screened positive on the 10-minute screening scan went on and had a multiparametric, and it turns out it was a normal scan or equivocal. So
exactly.
You accept that in a 10-minute scan.
Exactly.
But
I think we're going to get to a 15-minute scan, and it will be the only scan you have, and you do not then need to have a multiparametric MRI. You'll be told when you need a biopsy or when you don't, and that would be the end of it.
Caroline, a lot of people will want to know a bit more detail about what you found in terms of significant disease, because with PSAs, the median PSA was 2 or something, and half of men with PSAs less than 3. People might scratch that and say, well, what was your definition of clinically significant cancer on the biopsy? So can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so we defined it as Gleason 3+4. And we know that it would have been MR visible, Gleason 3+4, which we know adds another layer of significance. But we had some really surprising, massive high burden disease with low PSA. So there's one chap with a PSA of 2. He had Gleason 4+5 disease. We had in the UK, the chap who was on the BBC kind of breakfast news, he had, I think his PSA was around 1.7. He had Gleason 4+3, 4 millimeters. So we are picking up some probably, this isn't all 1 millimeter, 3+4. This is properly significant disease in there. So it was surprising even to us. And we've known for a long time that MR's better than PSA, but we were surprised by how much. I think there were 4 different Gleason 4+5s picked up in the study. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm shaking my head. It's lots of patients listen to this podcast as well, and they're worried about their PSA or about the reliability of PSA alone. We all are, but I think this study really reminds us about the limitations of PSA alone approaches, or even PSA augmented by PSA density in some shape or form. But I suppose the big question is, how would it translate? What is your plan for a larger trial or a health economic study? Because I think the findings are absolutely sensational, just amazing. And I, for one, will certainly be requesting MRs at lower PSAs, I think. Yeah. I mean, I think we've all learned that. We all see these patients, but I didn't think it was as dramatic as this prospective population cohort study is showing us, because I think we need to be using MR more and more often. That's my personal view.
We're a little bit limited by the MRI rebate indications. And, often we are tempted to order an MRI that fits outside those indications. And this is a very strong case to be made for that.
So, Caroline, and Shona, just to tell you how it works in Australia, we have widespread access to MR in the early detection setting since 2018, since you published the Precision study. But there are limits on it. And for example, your PSA, depending on your age group, needs to be above 5.5 or, within older age groups, etc. Or there has to be a palpable abnormality, etc. So there is some reasonable barriers put in place so that we're not routinely using multiparametric MR too often. But we might have to revisit all that as these sorts of studies pan out. And especially if this 10-minute screening scan, simple, yes-no scan, can be introduced into practice, because I still think it would be a very, very attractive way of trying to find those patients that PSA won't find. Mm. So
tell us about the next stage.
Yeah, just a note for the paper, the list of all the biopsy positive characteristics are in the appendix for those urologists who want to go and look at it all really carefully.
Absolutely, very detailed appendix, which is great.
Yeah. In terms of what's next, so the LIMIT study is funded and ready to go. So that has a similar approach. It's 800 men. 600 of those will be between 3 different hospitals, so Cambridge, Manchester and UCL. And then 200 of the men will be in a community-based van, because one of the other significant findings that we had in Reimagine was that Black men were much less likely to take up the invitation. So the response rate in Black men was around 7.8% versus 28% in white men. And of course, we know that they're at twice the risk of prostate cancer. So the van will be situated and invitations will go out in the Black community, in other areas, encouraging people to come forward, not going through the traditional GP kind of letter of invitation route. And that one will be starting fairly soon. And then what we're hoping, but which isn't yet funded, is a large collaborative study in the UK, coordinated by Prostate Cancer UK, probably with multiple funders, looking at a much larger population-based screening study, which, if it shows similar results or is shown to be helpful, would lead to a program. So that one's not fully funded as yet, so we're waiting and hoping.
Yeah.
I just love it. I think it's fantastic. Sensational.
And if you were going to hypothesize what would happen in the future, I mean, if this was all approved in a screening setting and a man has a 15-minute biparametric MRI and it's screen negative, what's next for him? Does he get another MRI in a few years' time? Are they then followed up with PSA? What do you propose for a man who has a negative screening MRI?
So I think there's a few unanswered questions. In all successful screening programs, you retest because you know that men don't have a disease at a certain point and it can develop. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what the retest interval should be. I suspect with MRI, it'll probably be fairly long, possibly 5, 8, even 10 years. We also don't know what additional information we'd get from a change in PSA over time. So, in fact, my own dad had a low PSA, it was 2, and it went up to 3. That was below the cutoff at the time for referral of 4. But I said, "You'll be fine, Dad, don't worry." His GP said, "No, I think this is a significant rise." He went to his local hospital in the Midlands, not in London. They just started their MRI program, and he actually had quite an aggressive 4+3, successfully treated. So that story about a changing PSA is also relevant.
Yeah.
We need to explore that a bit more as well, because we know that there's significant cancers out there.
I remember you telling me that story before. I'm sorry for laughing at it, but I remember the way you told it in a very self-deprecating way to me in the past, Carla. I'm sure you're doing very well.
Well, it's true. You know, once you do have a screening MRI, then maybe the PSA becomes a bit more meaningful.
Yeah.
You know,
it's kind of nuts. I just can't believe it. And so the machine itself, so what sort of magnet strength is it, Shona? Tell us a bit about it. Did you say it's on a truck? Is it it's in the back of a van?
We're not this one, but the next one will be scan in a van, So this particular study, we used a three Tesla magnet. So it's a fairly strong magnet. We wanted to do that because the diffusion imaging is better really at 3 Tesla. And we're only doing 2 imaging sequences. And so that's why we used that. I think on the modern 1.5 Tesla machines may get similar results, but you know, we haven't done the study in that. But the scan in the van will also be with the 3 Tesla magnet, hopefully in 6 months' time.
And what else is going on in MR as we wrap up on this topic? Because I know that is your interest is in novel technologies. Both of you have NIHR grants in the UK, fellowships rather, to pursue this topic of interest. But I think your particular interest is in novel technologies in MR. So tell us what's coming down the road.
I like playing with big machines and I enjoy working on prostate cancer and some combining those. I think there are 3 issues in prostate cancer. One is, can you get the right man scanned at the right time, which is all the screening question. And then the second issue actually is, once you've got a positive scan, how do you know who to biopsy? Can we reduce the false biopsy rate? At the moment, it's about 50% or so with multichromatic MR. 1 in 2 men doesn't need a biopsy. So I'm working on a technique called verdict MR, which the initial results demonstrate you could probably avoid 90% of the unnecessary biopsies. I mean, of course, first study, you need to prospectively move it forward, larger cohorts and so on. And the third question, which is even more important, I think, is once you've found a cancer, do you really know which cancers you need to treat? Most of the prostate cancer is not going to kill you, clearly. So how do you find the aggressive lesions? You could go on active surveillance. And on the back of an active surveillance program we have at UCL, I'm trying to develop a new technique called hyperpolarized MR, which sounds pretty fancy, but in essence, it's looking at metabolism, glucose metabolism, in a 2-minute scan in a standard MR scanner with a machine which allows you to do that. And I'm hoping to find that metabolism is a predictor of aggressiveness, but it's early days for that one.
Fascinating.
Aoife, did you enjoy all that?
I was approaching on nuclear medicine's territory.
Yeah, so Aoife, we'll reveal the news to the world that she's transitioning over to radiology as a career. And but we know she'll retain an interest in urology, and
that's why she likes X, going over to the dark side.
That's it, isn't it?
Yes.
It's in her personality, right?
It is amazing. We're just at the start of it, I think, for a lot of these.
Well, I've got a physics exam now coming up in March, so I feel like I've got a better understanding of MRIs. And I'm wondering how the van works, if, you know, the magnet, like, how did the cars go and buy the van, not, you know... I obviously don't understand it that well.
It's got extremely good shielding, which helps, but it needs a huge power supply, and so you can't just park it anywhere. It has to be parked in an installation which provides that.
We've just had to move a couple of MRs out of our building because they're running new trains on an underground track, we've had to relocate the whole MR imaging department out of Peter Max.
Well, Declan, we're always joking that often we see a PSMA PET before we see a patient's PSA. Maybe we should put a PET scanner in the back of a van and do a screening study.
Michael Hoffman, if you're listening, he's in South Africa at the moment, and he'll be saying, come on, let's talk about PET. But I really enjoyed that chat.
I think it's really great.
Sensational. It's
well
so hard.
Done. And to recruit through COVID and to get such a great study out is an incredible feat. So congratulations to both of you and the rest of the team.
Thank you.
Fantastic. And we'll put all the links in the show notes. Thanks so much to Caroline and Seanan for joining us. It's actually a public holiday, a bank holiday in the UK today. So they kindly got up and dialed in just to entertain us and educate us about the MR for prostate. Right. So yeah, absolutely fantastic. And that's it for us for today.
Nice, short, sweet podcast.
Yeah, exactly. We'll be back very soon with more. If you'd like to hear more about this, please do let us know. In the meantime, please do subscribe, give us a rating, spread the word, etc., and tell us what you want to listen to on GUcast. That's all we have time for. Thank you very much.